Welcome to McGuire on Wrestling.
What do you guys want to talk about?
Let's give the people what they want. Professional wrestling.
With Mike McGuire.
The happiest Canadian camper in the world. Tell me when I'm telling lies.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hello, happy third week of March. Is that what this is? Yeah, pretty much. Holy cow. We are less than 2 weeks away from WrestleMania. We've got AEW Dynasty on deck. There's a ton of other shows happening, of course, as is the season. Wrestlers are going from company to company. Who's showing up where? We have no idea, but one thing we know for sure is that it's time, once again, to chat a little bit about pro wrestling. If you're new to the show, welcome. That's what we do every week here and exclusively on the McGuire on Wrestling podcast feed. I say exclusively, but really, I don't care how you're listening. If you're here, you're listening, it's appreciated. You can get us where all major podcasts are carried on virtually every platform out there. And of course, through the main feed at McGuireShow.com. That's where you'll see all the episodes pop up every week, but not just this show, every week. Got different shows for you as well. Coming back soon, TSC with Andy Evans out in the UK. We've also got the alternate commentary table with Mitch and Dimitri, which dropped yesterday and does every Saturday. And little bonus shows that pop up from time to time, including our new series with myself and Joe Aguinaldo. We've seen a movie. We are going through the entire movie catalog of John Felix Anthony Cena, and it's going to be an interesting trip. We started off with his latest, Ricky Stenicki. I just this week rewatched The Marine. I think it's actually the first time I've watched it start to finish, and it's definitely a movie. It's definitely a movie. Of course, all these shows come to you free of charge each and every single week. We're not putting anything behind a paywall. Thank you to those who have supported the show through buying a t-shirt at McGuireShow.com. And if you are one of those people that are, we've had a few people actually say, you know, why don't you do a Patreon, or why don't you even do a PayPal or somehow donate to the show thing? That's nice. The sentiment is nice. And maybe down the road, we'll consider that as an option. But for the most part, honestly, we're happy to just give you a few minutes, a few hours a week to just not worry about things and not have to expect anything other than some fun talk about wrestling. And we've got a lot to talk about this week, so we'll get there in just a second. This Friday is Dungeon Wrestling returning to the Victoria Pavilion in Calgary, Alberta. Myself, Mitch, and Dimitri are all going to be there. We'll run down some of that card in just a bit for you. And also, I'm not alone on the show this week. AEW returned to Canada, and two voices who are synonymous with covering AEW especially return for one night only right here on McGuire on Wrestling. And that, of course, are my good friends Dan the Mouth Lavransky and Joe Aguinaldo. They were both at AEW Dynamite / Rampage this past Wednesday in Toronto. Super loaded show, and they'll give us their on-site feedback from that night and more. Last thing, as always, if you want to reach out to me or the team, it's real easy to do. Join the Facebook group, Team MOW, McGuire on Wrestling. We get you in the page. There's some great conversation. There's some old friends that are finding the show, too, and coming into the fold there. So welcome to them, and thank you for being a part of the conversation there. You can also reach me on any social media at McGuire Show, and you can email me directly anytime, McGuireShow@yahoo.com. Coming up this week, he's whipping out bags of skincare product, but more importantly, is Rocky making Roman look weak? Is MJF officially MIA in AEW again, or is this just another art imitating life moment? Wherever you are in the world, you can join the ACT guys and I for some dungeon wrestling this weekend. Plus, Dave Meltzer is back from the Wrestling Observer to help us go through some of the headlines and rumors from the past 7 days. It's all on the way, but first, here are the top stories of the week. It's the Five Count.
You want to hear the breaking news?
We start off this week very happy to share another update on the health of Mark Coleman, the first ever UFC heavyweight champion, who also risked everything to save his family from a house fire just 2 weeks ago. Now, Coleman was in hospital suffering from severe smoke inhalation after rescuing his parents from their burning home. He was then readmitted to hospital after contracting pneumonia. Well, just 2 days ago, welterweight fighter Matt Brown posted a video from his Instagram, which was inside a training cage, and revealed that Coleman was there, looking in pretty great spirits too.
The man is back. The hammer's back.
I never left. Well, for a second.
This coming Friday, it's the return of the Hart family's Dungeon Wrestling to pay-per-view. The show is called Unfinished Business 2. It's going to feature Chris Masters defending the Stu Hart Heritage Heavyweight Championship against former TNA Wrestling World Champion Steve Macklin. Now, Masters has been on a major international run as of late, so the match has got some great potential. Also on the show, Billington Bulldog Tommy Billington is going to be in action. Rohan Raja, TNA's Raj Singh, Aurora Taves makes her debut against Ava Lawless, Mo Jabari, and many more. The show streams for just $11.99 Canadian. So you Americans are getting a heck of a deal on this. You can order that show at dungeonwrestling.ca, and you can also get tickets for the show to join us at the Victoria Pavilion in Calgary for the event. Check the latest episode of the ACT from yesterday for a special promo code to save 25% on your tickets there. Some news coming out of TNA Wrestling as some stars are reportedly done with that company. According to Mike Johnson at PW Insider, Killer Kelly worked her last show at the TNA Sacrifice pay-per-view, and also reportedly finishing up at the company are the Motor City Machine Guns, Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin. Now, Shelley was recently TNA World Champion while still under the Impact branding. There's no word as to future plans for any of the three stars mentioned, but it's still a great time to be a wrestler, so no doubt they will all find spots if they want them. Well, Josh Barnett has spoken out about how he was able to get Shayna Baszler on his Bloodsport event during WrestleMania week. While appearing on the Under the Ring podcast, Barnett says it has a lot to do with who he knows and the uniqueness of his event.
Through relationships I've cultivated over the years, something like having Shayna Baszler at GCW Bloodsport it's a reality now. And I'm just super, super happy and honored to be able to do it. And I know that Shayna is going to do fantastic.
Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 10 takes place on April 4th. The knockout and submission-only pro wrestling event streams on pay-per-view through GCW. And don't forget, tomorrow night should be an interesting Monday Night Raw. CM Punk has been advertised to appear on the show, but nobody really knows why just yet. Now, obviously, it's going to help pack the house in Chicago because that's where Raw is, but some are speculating that Punk may have a role at WrestleMania, maybe even between Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins' World Heavyweight Championship match on night two of Mania. Punk has been teasing some projects he's been working on in his social media posts, one of which includes Randy Orton. As you probably already know, Punk is out of action for the time being after tearing his right tricep. That happened during the Royal Rumble match in the final moments against Cody Rhodes. We're going to check in with Dan the Mouth Lavransky and Joe Aguinaldo and get their feedback from their live AEW experience this past Wednesday in Toronto. And Dave Meltzer from The Wrestling Observer is standing by next, but first, 33 years ago today, one of the most celebrated reunions in pro wrestling took place on screen. We'll take you back to that next.
This is McGuire on Wrestling.
You got to stream the alternate commentary table. Every single Saturday, it's brought to you on the McGuire on Wrestling feed. I'm one half of your host, Demetra Carolis, and I'm here with my partner, Mitch Hondris. Mitch, what is the alternate commentary table?
It's simple. It's the perspective of wrestling from the other side of the railing, the real fans.
That's right. The perspective that you need. You might have a little bit of fun, too. The alternate commentary table. Subscribe free now to the McGuire on Wrestling podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts.
Cha-cha!
Welcome back to McGuire on Wrestling.
On March 24th, 1991, the much-discussed WrestleMania 7 was facing a bunch of challenges. It was the climax of the Sergeant Slaughter turncoat storyline, which supposedly saw the event threatened by outside security risks. Originally announced for the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum, Mania 7 would have been the first attempt to break the Silver Dome attendance record from WrestleMania 3. Eventually, that show ended up being moved to the much smaller LA Memorial Sports Arena, but it was still a historic night. The 14-match card was highlighted by a career versus career match between Macho King Randy Savage and the Ultimate Warrior.
You know, if you love this sport and you live and breathe it like Savage does, and I know the Warrior does, it's not only career ending. You might as well say their lives are on the line.
In the end, Warrior would win the match, but this also marked the on-screen return of Macho's most beloved valet, Miss Elizabeth, who would come to the aid of Randy after Queen Sherry took the boots to the now former Macho King.
Elizabeth, tears flowing! What a heart on that lady! She loves him! She's in love with the Macho King! She's loved him from the beginning!
Oh, the drama, the romance, the sequins. Now, WrestleMania 7 might not be everyone's go-to for a favorite WrestleMania, but that match and this moment has stood the test of time.
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider with Dave Meltzer, McGuire on Wrestling.
Dave, before we get going with our weekly chat, this is the week, of course, that WrestleMania 7 happened. We were just talking about it. Lots of stories about this event before it even happened.
That was a very controversial. It was actually the most controversial WrestleMania there ever was. Because of what happened leading up to it. You know, I remember like Bob Costas pulled out, and which actually started with me writing in the National about the playing on the war and everything like that, which was very controversial at the time. And, you know, once that story broke, you know, that's when Bob Costas pulled out, and then ticket sales weren't very good and had to move indoors. And that's kind of what happened there. I think they thought it was a great angle, but it's kind of a learning experience. It wasn't a great angle. I think with the war going on, people took it the wrong way. And trying to go to the LA Coliseum, at that point, WrestleMania wasn't so big that it would be successful at a building that large. And that was another thing. They wanted to break the WrestleMania 3 record.
Yeah.
And the advance wasn't there, and they had to move it indoors. Yeah.
Well, it was also a very different time in America as well, because like you said, the Iraqi war was happening. But I mean, just if you look at it from a number standpoint, take the slaughter Iraqi turncoat story aside, I mean, it was a different country. People were very hypersensitive about going to any big events, but the final numbers are in the tail.
Yeah,
there.
But look, the NFL was playing. I mean, I know they do that security risk thing. It's like the NFL was playing, college football was playing. It's like the idea that there was a security risk at WrestleMania, but at none of these other outdoor sports events. I mean, that it's. Or the people weren't going to events. People were going to events. The football games were all selling out.
Did the storyline sour fans that much that you would go from 67,000 allegedly at WrestleMania 6 to 16,000 at WrestleMania 7?
Whatever it was, they had sold 14,000 tickets about whatever it was 8 weeks out. And it was just like, you know, we're going to go in there. I mean, what would they have ended up with? It's hard to say. You know, I mean, maybe 30,000. You know, that's what WrestleMania was going to do in Los Angeles at that point. And I think that they figured that, you know, because they actually didn't even sell out the sports arena. I was actually in Los Angeles for the Cauliflower Alley Club the night before, and I was listening to radio stations, and they were giving away tickets the night before. $700,000+ gate, which at the time, you know, that was a good gate, you know, for that at that point. You know, now, obviously, you know, WrestleMania gate this year for each night is going to be over $10
million. Yeah.
Well over $10 million.
No, it's crazy. They're making money hand over fist. Even when the Money in the Bank tickets for Toronto just went on sale, they were selling them by the three pack, right? For the three events going on. And
that's the way to make sure that the, especially the NXT got a lot of tickets sold, because you first, if you wanted the best seats for Money in the Bank, you know, you had to buy the NXT and the SmackDown. But there, though, I mean, I don't know NXT will sell out, because NXT in Philadelphia isn't sold out. You know, the SmackDown and the Money in the Bank obviously are going to be easy sellouts.
Well, I think it's still safe to say, going back to WrestleMania 7 here, and we'll move on from this, probably the most memorable angle out of that show wasn't even the main event. It had to be Savage Warrior at that point.
Yeah. The retirement thing, you know, he wanted to take some time off to have a kid, which never happened. And, you know, he ended up coming back. But that was certainly the most emotional thing on the show. Yeah, I guess probably in some ways the highlight. I mean, Hogan Slaughter, you know, Slaughter's a good wrestler. He worked really hard. They had a fine match, not a, you know, it wasn't a blowaway or anything, you know, but it was a fine main event. But yeah, I think Warrior and Savage, you know, Savage was one of the few guys who really had the key to Warrior, because Warrior didn't have a lot of outstanding matches, but, you know, I mean, look, Randy, when he was on, he was an amazing worker.
All right. Well, let's fast forward into today, and we're going to start off in AEW. Of course, they just had a big show in Canada here in Toronto. The combination of Dynamite and Rampage together, basically a 3-hour Dynamite, if we're being real about it. But overall, a great show. We're going to talk to Dan Lavransky and Joe Aguinaldo. They were at the show, so they're going to give us their live feedback in just a bit here. But as for a show, as for a Dynamite, I mean, the building was full, the crowd was hot, the matches were great.
I enjoyed the show, but you know, I've been enjoying Dynamite a lot lately. Mm-hmm. I think most weeks it's been really good. You know, it was a pretty competitive night with all the basketball for ratings. The last 2 weeks of ratings, I think, you know, when I first saw the numbers both nights, I was disappointed. But when I looked at the competition and what the competition did, you know, this last Wednesday wasn't too bad. I mean, I would have expected a little better, but it's like, what are you going to do? But as far as the shows themselves, yeah, I think the shows themselves have been really good. I thought Edge and Christian, I knew they would have a good match. They're really smart when it comes to that kind of stuff. And Toronto crowd's a great crowd. You know, the Mercedes thing, you know, it was certainly helped the crowd. I mean, they sold a lot of tickets late, which is always a good thing. You know, the advance wasn't through the roof or anything. And it was, you know, I think a combination of Mercedes, Okada, you know, wrestling Eddie Kingston and obviously Edge and, or Adam Copeland and Christian. I think that those really brought through whatever it was, you know, I mean, probably over 2,000 tickets sold in the last couple of weeks.
Some folks are saying that might be one of, not the best, but one of the best I Quit matches in recent and maybe all history. Where do you sit with that?
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
I don't know. When it was over, like, I thought it was a really great match, but it wasn't like I was thinking like, oh man, like this is the best I Quit match I've ever seen. But I thought it was really good.
When you look at that match, is there anything maybe that you wouldn't have done or maybe they could have done differently to make it better for you?
They did more gimmicky stuff. I mean, as far as like with the different things than I would have expected, but that is the state of modern wrestling. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I don't know that you needed so many low blows at the end. You know, I think one low blow sold right, you know, or maybe two if you're really trying to make a point. Would I say that's overkill? Probably, but, you know, that's just theoretical, and they're pros at that. I mean,
what about a low blow with a 2x4 with nails sticking out of it, Dave?
Yeah, believe me, I know. I thought that should have been, I thought that when he was about to do that, that should have been finished. But hitting him, I think that he should have quit right after that. But, you know, whatever. I mean, we're splitting hairs now. You know, it's like, oh, he should have said I quit after getting the low blow instead of right before. The guy's about to crack his skull with a 2x4 with nails. I mean, it's...
I don't know. I think if I saw that coming towards my downstairs, that would have been my I Quit moment right there.
I think everyone would have been fine with that finish, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, that's probably one of the silliest conversations you and I have had about a match, but that's okay. Some interesting things happening behind the scenes or in the news outside of AEW, but around it. One of which a lot of people are noticing that MJF is again off the roster page and off the shop page for AEW.
He's been off the roster page since January.
Okay, so is there any worry here, any concern, or is he legit out of off contract time right now?
He's injured. It's what the situation.
Well, I know he's injured, but you know, guys can still be injured and sell T-shirts. Why would they take him off the stuff completely? Unless
I mean, Max is a really interesting character. He wants to go all the way with this, and that's the answer. I mean, it's like he is legitimately like dead to the world, so to speak. I mean, I know people who know him, you know, and don't hear from him. I think that's by design. I mean, I know myself. I don't hear from him. It's by design. So he's keeping extremely, you know, and he's done this before. He when he has an angle, he keeps it very, very secret because that's his mentality and more power to him. You know, as far as like where it's going or when he's coming back, could be back tomorrow. He could be back in 9 months. I don't know because he's, you know, the shoulder was bad though. I mean, the shoulder injury was bad. And whenever he comes back, I'm sure it's going to be with impact. It better be because there's no point in going this far without coming back with impact.
And that's just it. Like, we've had a lot of these returns and debuts kind of squash themselves in their opening moments. And like you said, I mean, MJF, he does lean towards that old school mentality a lot. You know,
there'd be guys
that would do injury angles, not leave their house for months. Right. So
maybe he's doing that. I mean, I don't hear much about him. I mean, I haven't seen him, you know, like I haven't seen him like doing movies or anything like that either. You know, I thought with this time off that I would probably see some acting stuff with him, and he may be doing it, you know, on a low key basis that I'm not aware of, but I have not seen any evidence of it. You know, like no one's like the last time he did a movie, you know, I mean, it was weird because it was just somebody who I knew, you know, happened to be there for the movie. He goes, mm-hmm. Oh, you know, he's there, you know, like that, you know, the Jewish summer camp movie. So it's like, but I have not heard of him doing any movies. I have not heard of him leaving the house. I haven't heard of him being in the gym. I haven't heard nothing. And he wants it that way.
That's interesting. Well, somebody that we did hear from, and we've also heard from the other side of it. Part of me smells an angle here. So I got to ask you, Jack Perry has been speaking out against AEW. He said that he asked for his release and was denied. Tony Khan did an interview recently saying, hey, he's happy that Jack's doing some great stuff over New Japan. As Tony tends to do, he will just deflect and pick the nice things to say about things. But is there really some real life tension here? Did Jack Perry, for your knowledge, actually ask for his release, or is this an angle?
I mean, I mean, I, I, I don't have a good answer to that one. When I asked about it, I was not told that. That doesn't mean it didn't happen. I was just asked, like, what's going on with Jack Perry? And, you know, I was told something, you know, that, you know, he was very sorry and everything. And he says he's not, and he never said that. So, you know, I mean, my story, I think, is more beneficial to him than his story. But which is probably, like, the first time I can recall I'm going, like, wow, I wrote something sympathetic to him, and he said that it didn't happen. That, you know, it does fit in with the storyline. As far as his storyline, hating AEW, ripping up the contract and everything like that. I mean, I presume he's coming back. You know, the deal is what happened in San Jose when he tore up that contract and everything like that. It's like New Japan and AEW are business partners. New Japan, he ain't doing that in a New Japan ring without Tony Khan's knowledge. There's no way. Because if he did, New Japan, you got to understand, Forbidden Door is one of the biggest events of the year for New Japan. They're not going to do anything to get Tony Khan mad. You know what I mean? It's just like, we saw with AAA what happens when you get Tony Khan mad. You know what I mean? Right. It's like, it's not worth it. So, you know, everything that's going on there, he's, you know, Tony's hands-on when it comes to his guys in other companies. Totally hands-on. So, it's an angle. Yeah.
Yeah, it just stinks of me to work shoot, and that's fine. I mean, that's, again, we've talked about it before where some things are getting out now just to help support these work shoot angles, and it's up to us, I guess, to figure out what we want to really delve into and not, but just, it's optically, it's just too, it's a little too much for me to believe that there's no involvement on both sides working together on this, so.
Look, it's an AEW guy, right?
Yeah.
He's under contract to AEW. He's working New Japan. Of course, Tony Khan, you know, I mean, there's going to be stipulations, like, you know, as far as like who he can beat, who he cannot beat. Anyone who knows when you book an AEW talent, AEW is going to give you parameters of how you can use the guy. That's just, and that's how it should be.
We got Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer and WrestlingObserver.com here. Dave, let's jump over to WWE. We are less than 2 weeks away from WrestleMania 40. Looking like it's going to be a rocket buster show. Although I did laugh because when I was doing my WrestleMania 7 recap a few minutes ago, I did say they did 14 matches in one night on that show, which if you go back and think about it, I mean, 14 matches on a WWE show today, you might as well be there till Christmas because it would be.
In those days, they did a lot of short matches. Now, yeah. I mean, if they advertise a match, especially with Paul Levesque, you know, more than Vince, I think he wants to give the guys opportunity to have the best match that they can.
Yeah.
You're doing 14 matches on one show, and, you know, half the people on that roster are not going to get the opportunity to have a great match because they're going to be rushed through it to give time to, you know, the key matches.
Well, and 80% of the entrances at WrestleMania 7 took 30 seconds, too. So, I mean, there's that. But
yeah.
But let's go to The Rock. Do you think that at this time, The Rock is perhaps making Roman look weaker than he should be? Because, I mean, The Rock has these huge, epic, between his promos, between his presentation, and then we saw Roman and Cody in the ring last night. It kind of just plateaued in the middle and didn't really escalate to anything really crazy. I mean, when you look at a Rock versus Cody promo and a Roman versus Cody promo, is The Rock leaving everybody else in the dust right now?
Yeah. I mean, it's like what I've been watching, my thought is that, you know, the WrestleMania main event is The Rock against Cody, and forget about the title. Even though the title is the giant part of the story and the climax on Sunday is the title, it's kind of like, the match is The Rock and Cody, even though they're in a tag. I mean, that's the heat.
Right.
They've just been, both of them. I think Cody's done a great job too. They've both been blowing away everyone else. I think Seth has done very well. Roman has done well, but no, you know, like, am I more interested as a fan watching this in seeing The Rock or Roman right now? It's The Rock by a long shot. The guy has done incredible promo work. I mean, you know, he is where he is, both in acting and his records for drawing and wrestling for a reason. And every time he comes back, you know, every time he comes back, when he came back with Cena, it was the same thing. You know, you watch and you just go, man, he's just got so much more charisma than, I would say, than anyone in the history of wrestling. It's Hogan and him, you know, as far as like in the history of wrestling that I have seen. You know, Hogan was, you know, place and time too. I mean, Dwayne is, I think, more, you know, as a talker, I would say Dwayne blows Hulk Hogan away.
Oh, it's night and day. I mean, it's not even close, right? And to watch these guys go now. And the funny thing, I saw Roman on that Pat McAfee interview, and I thought he was actually better in that arena than he was in his own on SmackDown on Friday. But
he always comes across really well in the real world. You know, yeah. I mean, as a real world guy, I think he's, you know, nobody says anything bad about Roman. And believe me, in the position that he's in as the top guy, you know, you would think that there'd be talent like that would. I mean, and they do on promos to build a match. Behind the scenes, I don't hear anybody ever say anything negative about Roman. Other, you know, it's just the basic thing is he's better than people give him credit for. And look, I mean, yeah, The Rock came in and overshadowed everybody. But until he did the last 5 years, who's been the biggest star in wrestling?
This is true. All right. Speaking of big stars in wrestling, it's been an interesting week. Ronda Rousey has a new book out. Goldberg doing interviews for the sake of interviews right now. I'm not sure what the basis was, but both having some pretty rotten things to say about a company that helped them make a lot of money in WWE. Now, Ronda's, I feel, maybe a little more justified from the standpoint of working with people that are obviously in some very damning situations outside of the wrestling world right now. But is this just a new run of people who are just being bitter towards WWE for the sake of getting some attention? Or do you think there's any merit to either of these?
Not attention. I mean, Ronda's trying to sell a book, but I'm sure Ronda in her book, I'm sure, if you know her, what's in her book is her beliefs. She's not going to make a story up or anything like that. The people she buries are people she wants to bury, you know, and, you know, for different reasons. And, you know, what she said historically about WWE and treatment of women before she got there, it's accurate. You can't argue it. And if you're Ronda Rousey and you come in and you look back at that bra and panties history, you know, it's going to be real hard at you as a woman athlete to justify that.
Well, there's people that still think that's what WWE is today because they haven't watched it in 20, 30 years. So
yeah. And just the fact that, but I mean, if you look at it from her standpoint, you know, that women, you know, are much bigger now than they were then. And, you know, they never even allowed that kind of wrestling that they do now in that era. The key people there were drag kicking and screaming. And if it wasn't for Ronda and her success drawing in UFC, none of this would happen. They would have just gone with the idea that this is what women's role is in wrestling. And nobody wants to see women throw punches or stomp or anything like that. And they're just there to do what they were training them to do. Because you could read Becky Lynch's stuff from when she was being trained in WWE. And it was, don't do too many moves and no closed fists and things like that. And obviously it's completely changed because Ronda proved women can draw. And then this generation of women in NXT where they weren't held back did so well that eventually Vince saw it and eventually changed. But yeah, you can't erase that history. And Ronda talked more about that history. She certainly had problems with John Laurinaitis and Bruce Pritchard. I think that that's going to be stuff in the book. Obviously, the Bruce Pritchard stuff, people already knew. She blasted him before. And it's not like she didn't like everyone there or anything. I don't think there's anything negative about Paul Levesque. And I know there's nothing going to be nothing negative about Stephanie because they get along really well. It's just, you know, some people you get along with and some you don't. And Ronda speaks her mind. You know, whether you agree with her or disagree with her, she's going to speak her mind.
Well, I think this goes back to the tale of two WWEs, too, we've talked about, right, where now that Vince is getting less and less power and influence, maybe even though she said flat out she has no desire to return to WWE at any time, I mean, there's always the dump truck full of money that'll change people's minds.
I never believe anyone when they say, you know, never say never, and she's not that, you know, she's not that old to where she can't come back in 2 years. But I think today, right now, does she want to go on the road and be a pro wrestler? And I mean, she liked pro wrestling, but I don't think she wants to. I think she wants to raise her family now.
Yeah, and she's got her family, a farm. She's doing good. She's doing all right.
And she's got money. She made a lot of money in fighting, and she made a lot of money in wrestling, and she's good when it comes to money.
With Bill Goldberg, some interesting comments came out from him this past week. I only saw some interview highlights. I haven't sat down and watched the whole thing yet. But, I mean, people always jump on to the negative things anybody says about anything and run that as a headline. But do you think there's ever a chance we see Bill Goldberg return to a wrestling ring on a major scale anywhere?
Well, there's a chance. I mean, I know Tony Khan's wanted him. And my gut says that the reason it hasn't happened is because, you know, Bill wants a lot of money to do stuff. Yeah. And, you know, and it must be a lot because we know Tony Khan's willing to pay a lot to get guys. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I just think that's it. He wants a lot of money and, you know, whatever happens, happens. And I don't think he needs to do it. If he had a lower price, would Tony take him? Of course he would. Would WWE take him? Of course they would, for limited stuff. I mean, he's not going to be out there month after month either.
Right.
Nor should he be. But it's like, you know, Bill, you know, it's one of the reasons it took so long to get Bill was for WWE on the second run was because of the money situation. And then essentially what happened was Lesnar and others went to them and just go, we can really make some money with Bill right now. He's been gone, nostalgia, blah, blah, blah. And it worked out. So he got a really fat contract. Did his dates. I mean, I think he wanted the big retirement thing. It didn't happen. I think he's bitter that he was promised stuff that didn't happen, which happens with everyone. I mean, you know, just talk to Brad about promises and stuff. I mean, yeah. I just talked to Brad not that long ago. And I mean, it was stuff that I hadn't, you know, we hadn't even talked about like, you know, going back 1992 and what he was promised and how it turned out in 93 and, mm-hmm. you know, little things. And it's just like, you know, Vince says, what he wants you, what he thinks will pacify you at that moment. And then somebody else will come in and say, oh, it's not that way. And it's been that's been the way with Vince for well over 40 years.
I think, you know, for the limited time that he was around in the main event scene there originally and for what he did, I mean, I can understand Bill Goldberg wanting that farewell, that retirement match. But I also understand WWE side of it right now where it's like, we're beyond that right now. Like, we've got a whole crop of young stars we're doing. Like, it's an interesting time. Interesting time. Okay. Of course, WrestleMania, like I said, less than 2 weeks away here. We have CM Punk coming back on Monday Night Raw tomorrow night. Do you think we see him added into this world title match here between Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins?
You mean being the corner or distract Drew or something?
A referee, maybe, or... Enforcer, I don't know.
I don't see Enforcer because he's hurt. And you know, he's not going to be cleared with, you know, this soon after surgery. Referee, yeah, it's possible if he's up for it, if that's what they want to do. As far as being involved in some form, I expect he's going to be involved in some form in the show. Yeah. And set something up, presumably with Drew. You know, I mean, that's the program, you know, for whatever it is, October, November. But that's the program, you know. I mean, Drew's working really hard in the program, and so is Punk. So I know that's where they're going, and that's where they should be going.
They're doing a good job of keeping his name on TV, which is good. And then obviously this appearance tomorrow night will only help that further. But
it'll be great.
We had this discussion last week talking about it. You know, I still feel that if Punk's going to do anything even close to a wrestling ring, I don't know that he needs to do it until he's healed. You know, we were talking earlier about, you know, coming back with an impact with MJF. You know, the only reason Punk should be on this show is because it's in Chicago tomorrow night. And then I think, honestly, he should still stay away until he comes back.
I think because it's WrestleMania, you know, that they may just go in there and go, look, they did videos of him training and everything like that. So it's mm-hmm. like, I think that he'll, I mean, he's going there, of course. Of course he's going there. But I mean, I think that you can shoot an angle with him there for 5 months, because an angle at WrestleMania will mean a lot more than an angle in 5 months on Raw. And let it simmer. You know, I mean, if he doesn't do anything and they decide that's for the best, that's fine too. You know, they don't need him on the show. It's not like, you know, they're going to do great no matter whether he's there or not. It's just a question of how they view his next storyline. And is it better to do something at WrestleMania, or is it better to just keep him away and just do it with something else? And there's not really a right or wrong. I think he'll have some involvement in the show though.
All right. Well, there you have it. Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer and WrestlingObserver.com. As far as the newsletter this past week, Dave, what are some things people can read about?
I do have the detailed version of the Rock story and a lot on the Ronda Rousey thing, you know, a lot of perspective on it, talking about her and you know, where she's coming from in a lot of ways. And the Kung Lee lawsuit settlement, giant, giant MMA story. We don't have all the details yet because they're not going to come in for 45 or 60 days, but $335 million lawsuit, one of the biggest class action suit settlements in the history of the United States. 51st biggest in history of the United States ever. So, I mean, wow. That's a big one. It's a big one yet in other ways, you know, and the story basically talks about, in some ways, people are disappointed because they had heard could be $1 billion. It could be $5 billion. It could be $10 billion. And it's $335 million. So it kind of, you know, like that. But that was, that's a story that's been brewing for 10 years. That mm-hmm. lawsuit's filed. In San Jose, California, I was there the day it was filed in 2014. And it really tells you about the court system. That thing was on hold forever. And I think the money terms we know, but as far as the stipulations and everything like that, we will not know. And when we do, you know, we could probably make a lot better judgment about all that. But the rest, you know, just all the news of the week and a feature on state by state, how pay-per-view did for TNA, WWE, and AEW over the last year. So you can kind of see where each company is strong and where each company is weak per capita. By pop, you know, actually by percentage of the population and the percentage of the pay-per-view buys. So it's kind of a state by state thing. And you kind of, each company is different. Each company has a very different audience. I mean, one thing, and I don't have any answer to this as to why, other than it happened, is there were very, very few people who bought the Francis Ngannou Anthony Joshua boxing match last week. It was a complete and total flop on pay-per-view. However, a large percentage of the people who have dishes that bought that show bought TNA Hard to Kill.
Hmm.
I mean, I just saw that and it's just a number. And it's just like, you know, usually if I get a number, I can kind of go, okay, this is probably why it happened. I have no idea why it happened. And nobody has read it, has like come up with a, like, why would people who buy the Ngannou Joshua fight, why would such a high percentage be interested in buying a TNA pay-per-view? So that's the big question for the week, I guess.
Well, there you have it. And maybe if you're out there listening and you buy these pay-per-views, get in touch with Dave. It's real easy to do, and maybe we can get an answer there. All right, Dave. Well, thank you, sir. Next week, of course, it'll be the 1 week to WrestleMania show. So looking forward to catching up with you then.
Okay, great. Have a great week.
Coming up next, they are back. Joe and Dan with a one night only AEW Dynamite review because both of them were there in Toronto. So whether you were at the show live or you watched it on TV like the rest of us, let us know if you agree with what they have to say next.
This is McGuire on Wrestling.
Hello from jolly old England. This is Andy Evans from the Squared Circle podcast, which you can listen to each and every week on McGuire on Wrestling podcast feed. If you would like to know the latest from professional wrestling with coverage of TNA, WWE, All Elite, New Japan, and more, plus in-depth look back at what happens on the days gone by, then check us out each and every week as part of your midweek fix. This is TSC, the Squared Circle.
Welcome back to McGuire on Wrestling.
Well, you know you got a good day ahead of you when Joe Aguinaldo and Dan the Mouth Lavransky get back together to talk a little bit of AEW. When's the last time you guys did this?
It would have been at work. Joe and I do our imaginary podcasts at work. We meet in the hallway. We talk for 5 minutes. Done.
Ten minutes.
That's fair. Well,
and,
you know,
and one of these days we'll record it too.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Well, we'll keep you to around 10 minutes here or so. But both of you guys were at AEW Dynamite and Rampage, which were back-to-back shows. Why didn't they just call it a three-hour Dynamite? I don't know. But anyway, you were at the show in Toronto. It was returned to the Coca-Cola Coliseum, or the Rico for people that still remember it as that way. Dan is sporting his finest bright orange attire right now. Joe, look at that, flex and everything. Joe Aguinaldo has got on board the Bruv train. That needs to be a little bigger on your shirt where it says Bruv there, Joe.
I know, it's not very noticeable, eh?
No, it barely stands out at all. But let's start mouth with you, because you were at the last run of Toronto shows as well. And I know that back then you were thrilled because your absolute favorite, Jade Cargill, made an appearance.
R-D-R-R.
We're starting off hot, friends. But when it comes down to that experience versus this one, just from an overall perspective, before we get into the nitty gritty, how was it for you this time around?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. I mean, the thing about the Coca-Cola Coliseum when it comes to events is that it's not a very big place. So right. It really doesn't matter where you're sitting. I was up in the stands and it didn't matter at all. In fact, during the I Quit match, it was quite handy to be away from the ring so you could see all the craziness that was going on. But overall experience was great. I was running into people I hadn't seen in years, left, right, and center. And the section I sat in was really vocal. They were during Okada and Eddie Kingston, they were going nuts. They were screaming and yelling for both guys. I've noticed people have chants. They get confused if the chant is only two syllables. The chant has to be at least four syllables, or it seems like people get confused. I noticed that a lot. That was one of my big takeaways from the show.
Yeah, what would it be? Da, 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 da. That works, right?
Yeah. But if it was da-da, they seemed like they had the hardest time in the world dealing with that.
What's an example of a two-syllable chant that you heard or maybe heard attempted?
Well, they were trying to do like just certain people's name. Like they were trying it with Eddie Kingston. Kingston. And I'm just like, no. Doesn't work. It's got to be at least three syllables or more, or it just doesn't.
Or you could have done Eddie Kingston, right? Like, why not?
But they figured it out eventually, but there was a learning curve.
Fair enough. Now, Joe, this was your first in-person AEW experience, correct?
Yes. Yep.
All right. You didn't go to the last run of shows. So you were telling me beforehand that you were excited because you had some big names you were hoping to see. So who was on your wrestling bucket list to all see live? And this really happened all in this show.
Pretty much. I mean, Okada for sure. Osprey. I didn't know how much I wanted to see Shibata until Shibata came out. So that was a good thing too. And I got to see Monet. So like, you know, I got to see all the bigger names that have been coming out, but specifically Okada, as someone who's been a New Japan fan for a while. And I never thought I would get a chance to see him live. So, you know, it was pretty cool to see him wrestle against Eddie Kingston.
He had the match against Eddie Kingston. He wins the championship from Eddie Kingston. Did that live up to expectations for you?
For me personally, yeah, because I'm not an Eddie Kingston guy. So I was firmly Team Okada. and you know what? It's funny because there were dueling like Eddie Kingston Okada chants. So I would almost argue that it was pretty close to 50-50 in terms of support of Eddie Kingston and Okada. Also, I did want to bring something up because Dan did mention chanting. Like, I saw a lot on our Facebook page that like the crowd seemed dead, and they weren't dead. Like, I think that was a TV thing because like someone mentioned that they were really quiet, for example, during that Okada match. And I'm like, hell no, they weren't. That was one of the louder matches that we had. Hmm. So I'm curious to know how it translated on TV because live, it was actually pretty rowdy.
See, and I saw a few people say that, and Dan, I'll ask you about this too, because I don't know, the crowd seemed pretty engaged for most of the show to me as well. I mean, it might just be a miking thing. We can figure out the technical semantics all we want here, but overall, you'd say that people were pretty much jazzed from start to finish on this thing?
Yeah, definitely. I watched a bit of the TV since going, and definitely there was some miking issues because there were parts on the TV that in the arena was much, much louder. Now, I didn't get to the Don Callis segment because that, I don't know how that came across on TV, but that was so insanely loud that first time he came out during Dynamite and just stood on the ramp and he tried to talk and I could not hear a word of what he said during that promo because the crowd just totally went to town on him.
Yeah, arguably he got like good guy or bad guy. He got the biggest reaction.
Oh, it's not an argument, Joe.
Wasn't even close.
Yeah, but so I'm curious if that one had to have translated on TV just because it was so loud. But I did find other ones, especially again during some of those early matches in Dynamite. I didn't think it was capturing the sound of the crowd that was there because the only time they really quieted down was after Dynamite, and we'd had just the crazy I Quit match, and we just go into Rampage, and it's like, it was obvious they were going to kind of mellow out after the I Quit match. So to me, that was the only part, but I totally understand why they did.
Did you guys both stay till the end of Rampage? Like, did you sit in for the whole show? And was there anything after Rampage that was taped?
Very little. I mean, Tony Khan came out and kind of thanked the audience as he always likes to do at live shows. And that was it. They didn't shoot anything after Rampage.
Yeah, he kind of teased maybe another pay-per-view coming to Toronto because he was very like, you know, Toronto's got some of the greatest fans. We love coming here for Dynamite. We love coming here for, you know, Rampage, and we like coming here for. And then he said pay-per-view, but he never said anything. But I think it was just, again, I think it was just more of a tease than anything.
Well, and that's fair. I mean, to be honest, it's one of the few buildings they've managed to legit sell out for a while here. And that's not a knock. It's just, I mean, why wouldn't you want to come back? Obviously, the crowd was there to support the show, and Toronto has always shown up for these things. They've got the show coming up in London next week. I don't know how that's going to go. What do you guys think about the feedback there and the reaction to that show is going to be?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm not sure. London is not what you think of as a wrestling city, but they haven't had a show yet, so they might be, it might actually do really well. I'm curious about the Dynamite the next week in Quebec City to see how that one does, because I think that's an interesting market. You know, Montreal, definitely a wrestling town. I'm not sure about Quebec City. I'll be curious to see how well that one plays out.
I think if anything, that might be finally the chance for the former 2.0 to actually get over on a match or something. Like Matt Menard might actually get a world title shot or something. Who knows? But
that would make sense, though.
Yeah, well, you know, that would be AEW doing what they do. I don't need to know how much you spent here, but I always like asking this question, and you guys are always straight shooters with it. Value for your money. Joe, let's start with you. Did you feel like you got it?
100%. I'll admit, I did not pay a lot for my ticket. Granted, I, you know, it was like one of those things where I'm going to just take a look, and I have no problem telling it. Like, I think I spent, like, it with taxes and all, $46.
Okay.
And because like to further Dan's point, I would say that I had maybe some of the, and I'm using air quotes here, the worst seats, because we were actually behind the big screen. So whenever they went backstage, like for that brawling backstage, I couldn't see anything because I couldn't see the TV. But that said, I was still pretty close to the ring from a proximity perspective. So I have no problems with the value that I got with that.
Mouth, how about you?
Yeah, definitely. I think the thing to do with shows like AEW is do what like Joe did. And I did this as well. Don't look for your tickets until right close to the event. I just bought mine maybe, I don't even think it was a full week before the event. And I got two tickets. Mine were more expensive than Joe's. My tickets were about $80 a piece. But from, again, Coca-Cola Coliseum, it doesn't matter where you're sitting. I loved our seats. I thought we totally got our money value. I'm not even going to harp about the $20 beer. I thought the whole show, well, I totally feel like I got my money on this one. Absolutely. Cause it was a pretty good show from start to finish. And the I Quit match I thought was fantastic. And I really enjoyed the way they worked humor into the I Quit match. I thought they did a really good job. I cracked up for like 5 minutes when Christian ran into the women's washroom and Edge just goes right after him. And then we see all these ladies running out of the washroom. I just thought that was such a simple spot and such a great cowardly heel thing for Christian to do. That part just killed me. I was laughing for like 5 minutes after that.
Joe, how about you? Highlight of the night for you?
Oh, it's gotta be Okada winning, man.
Yeah.
I'm such an Okada fan because I was a New Japan fan for a long time that, like, just to see him and actually see him win, and it helped that he beat Eddie Kingston. I was totally into that. Also, I did want to mention one thing because I know you've talked about this with Meltzer on various shows.
Yeah.
So merch stand, just so you know.
Yes.
They did have, I want to say, like 7 items available. There wasn't a huge lineup. But I got to admit, I was kind of hoping to see more of what they had. Like, they had like AEW in Canada. They had the Sting retirement shirt. They obviously had a Brava shirt. They had Okada. They had the Bang Bang Scissor Club, which is no longer a thing.
Yeah.
And they had like these cardboard cutouts of Juice Robinson. And I was kind of like, eh. So, I mean, obviously I got a shirt, but I would say I was mildly disappointed in the merch stand, and yes, the exorbitant food prices. If there was any downer, that would be it for me on the night.
That's venue. We can't hold AEW accountable to that. But at the same point, I do find the comments about the merch interesting, because in Calgary, when I went to that show for Collision last year with CM Punk and Ricky Starks, the Owen Hart final, they had a lot more merch than what they had in Toronto. Even when I went to the Winnipeg show last year, they had more merch than Toronto had. So I don't know if it's an Ontario thing, if it's just crossing the border. Like, I don't know why they don't bring more to Ontario, because that's really interesting to me that they didn't have more.
I agree with Joe. I mean, I went and looked at the merch table as well, and I was somewhat surprised at how little few things there were. I was of the same mind. I thought they would have a lot more stuff. I mean, they did have the main ones. Like, I think having the Bruv shirt and having an Okada shirt, obviously, I think you needed to have those in Toronto. But yeah, Juice Robinson cutout. Although, Joe, I did see someone in the crowd.
Yeah, for sure. And like, so like don't get me wrong, they were fine, but like if they had had, say, like an AEW world belt along with the Juice Robinson cutout, I get it. But when the Juice Robinson cutout is one of the feature items, I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that. Right. The last thing I will say about the merch line, though, because again, I know you've discussed this with Meltzer, was it, there actually wasn't a huge lineup to it. Now, granted, this isn't a huge venue. Yeah. But like I got in, there was like three people in line. I got the shirt within like 5 minutes. So it was pretty.
No belts. No belt. That's interesting.
I didn't see any. They had bags. They had like those bags with the drawstrings.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a big price difference. When I saw the belt at Calgary, I think they wanted $999 for it.
Wow. Yeah. Holy, that is high end.
And yikes. my friend Heather was there with me, and I was like, just biting my tongue the whole time, like, put the credit card away, McGuire. But maybe they had one, and maybe it got sold before you got to the booth. I don't know, Joe. But yeah, that surprised me they didn't have one. Look, that's a big moneymaker for them. But either way, gentlemen, any closing thoughts before we go here and wrap up the one night only return of Joe and Dan talking about AEW here on McGuire on Wrestling?
Just to say that I'm still enjoying the product a lot. I still like what they're doing. I really enjoyed the fact that this show did sell out as well, because it really made for a powerful audience. And yeah, the fact that the crowd was pretty well hot for pretty well all of Dynamite, and then they cooled down a bit for Rampage, which is understanding. But overall, no, a great fun experience. And if you're just a little strategic with your ticket buying, you can get in at a half decent price and not have to like mortgage the house.
Joe?
Okay, so Dan covered the getting a ticket part, so I'm going to cover the show itself. The one thing I was actually pretty happy with was the fact that the women were getting some love. So you had Monet at the beginning, you had the tag match with Toni Storm and Deonna Purrazzo, and then you had the women main eventing Rampage, which, by the way, that match was insane. It was great.
It was good.
So, yeah, if you haven't seen it, get your eyes on that one. That was really good.
So that spot that Willow did with where she had Sky and put her through the two tables on the outside. Whoa, that was insane. That was a crazy spot.
Well, that along with Statlander taking the thumbtacks, because like at that point, I had actually moved closer to the ring. So, and by the way, shout out, I saw an old friend of ours, Mark Andrada. So I was sitting with him, and he was about five rows up from the 100 level, which is really close to the ring. So we got a really good look at that thumbtack spot, and it was like, ow. But kudos to the women for getting some main event time. I think I'm hoping that this is the start of AEW really getting their women's division on track, because they got some serious talent there now.
Joe Aguinaldo and Dan the Mouth Lavransky, gentlemen, thank you both very much for your on-site recap, as it were, from AEW Dynamite Rampage this past week in Toronto. The Canadian tour continues, gentlemen. All the best to both of you. And Mouth, I got to ask, can you give us one? Just one?
A one, a two, a one, two, three, four.
McGuire on Wrestling.
Final segment of the show. Just before we get into your feedback here, which, by the way, you can do anytime on the Team MOW McGuire on Wrestling Facebook page. Love having new members join. We've seen the numbers ticking up over the last few weeks here. So if you want to meet some cool people, love talking about wrestling, and don't like to poo-poo all over it all the time, it's the place to be. Team MOW, McGuire on Wrestling on Facebook. Join the group. It'll take a couple seconds to get you approved, probably, and then we'll get you in and have some fun. But before we get to talking about the question of the week, which is, I think, a very fair observation, we brought it up with Dave Meltzer earlier in the show as well, is The Rock too good at what he's doing for the rest of WWE, especially for the guy he's supposed to be there working with in Roman Reigns? Is he overshadowing Roman? Is it too much? But I wanted to share a clip with you from the Pat McAfee show that happened this past week. You may have heard Roman Reigns was on that show. He was doing his thing, raising the ones, talking about being the tribal chief, but then an interesting conversation came up about who should induct Paul Heyman into the WWE Hall of Fame. This is something a lot of fans have been asking and talking about. But Roman had a very sincere moment when he talked about the impact of a Paul Heyman on the wrestling business throughout the years.
There's going to be a lot of facts and a lot of history that you can lay down with the wise man. I mean, all the way from, you know, his beginnings with the giant phone to being the advocate to, you know, to being my special counsel, I think whoever does it just needs to be themselves and just tell the truth. Because Paul, he's an incredible man. He's an unbelievable man. And what he's done in this business, and then I also think what he's done in his personal life, I know well because I work with him and I'm good friends with him. I just have the utmost respect for him. I really do. And nobody deserves a Hall of Fame induction more than him.
So now that brings us to the conversation of the week, and that is The Rock and his performance on WWE television and also outside of the ring. Of course, there's been a lot of talk about those promos on Instagram and all these other places where Rock is showing up. I don't know if you saw the video where he went to a Target store and handed out product from his new skincare line. I mean, everything this guy does is just promotional genius in one way, and in another way, it's like, wow, this guy is really unstoppable. He can do whatever he wants. So, ask you today, is The Rock making Roman Reigns look weak? And a lot of feedback on this one already on the Team MOW McGuire on Wrestling Facebook page. Dimitri Carolis from over at the ACT. He thinks it's by design. He thinks the whole bravado of The Rock is being the final boss, grandstanding on how he's on the board, is culminating to Roman Reigns feeling slighted and reminding him who the real boss is. I'm convinced that everything was in the cards for them to be at WrestleMania next year. Ooh, that's interesting. I mean, yeah, you'd like to have it at the big tentpole WrestleMania 40, but we do got to remember there is WrestleMania 41, which, by the way, the looks of things, according to some scuttlebutt going around, is going to be announced for Minneapolis, Minnesota, which means it looks like I'm going to WrestleMania again because I love going to Minneapolis, and I think it'll be a great city for it. So let's go down the list here, though. Mike Marquard says, not intentionally by any means, but The Rock's making himself the focal point of the feud of the entire bloodline. We know the two will eventually feud, and I'm sure Rock overshadowing Roman will play into that, but they feel less like a team then Roman is The Rock's sidekick, or worse, underling or lackey. Yes, when you're the final boss, what does that make the tribal chief then? You know what I mean? Final is final, but tribal chief is supposed to be top, so I don't know. Blair says, as expected, he's bigger and more charismatic, and I believe it's by design. Plant the seeds of jealousy and dissension. I'm just waiting for a promo where Rock is talking, Roman goes to say something, and Rock cuts him off with quiet Roman. The Rock is handling family business. Ooh, interesting. And I like the fact you're even writing the promo. That's some good stuff there. My buddy Jordan Clark, a.k.a. Dirty Duke Durango, just thinks that the heel work that The Rock is doing isn't really that great. Can't say it word for word because we're on the clean feed, but nevertheless, Jordan, thank you for your opinion here. And yeah, lots of feedback, all saying kind of the same thing here, and that is that The Rock is definitely overshadowing Roman, but it could be part of the grand design. Well, you know what? I wouldn't put anything past anybody. Again, this is pro wrestling, and just when you think you got it figured out, if they're good, they change it up for you, and they make you think again. So I dig it. I like it a lot. I love that you are here again for this week's edition of the show. Next week, the last show before WrestleMania weekend. I'll be in Calgary for some of it. Again, Dungeon Wrestling this Friday on pay-per-view for just $12. Support Canadian Pro Wrestling. You'll get an amazing title match. You'll see some other great matches as well. And if you need more details, dungeonwrestling.ca. That shuts her down for this week. Until next time, as always, thanks for listening and letting me do what I do. Till then, play safe, drive safe. Bye. Be seeing ya.